You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today is from the Psalms, and the Psalms is a collection of collections. Within this one book, there are five books written over many centuries, stretching from the days of Solomon's Temple, about 950 before the Common Era, to after the exile, about 350 before the Common Era. They were influenced by many surrounding cultures and span the spectrum of human emotions: praise, lament, thanks, wisdom, awe, and more. In this first part of Psalm 19, there's a musing about how, even before speech, creation's voice goes out through all the earth. It uses ancient mythic language that glories in the sun in a way that you might expect to hear in any ancient Near Eastern hymn to the sun god. God is now seen to set a tent for the sun as it makes its way across the sky. We revel in the sun and its light and heat, as we revel in all the wonders of creation, suggesting that in the beauty and mystery of creation, we see something of the divine.
Our words of wisdom are from Psalms 19, verses 1 through 10. The heavens are telling the glory of God, and the firmament proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours forth speech, and night to night declares knowledge. There is no speech, nor are there words. Their voice is not heard, yet their voice goes out through the earth, and their words to the end of the world.
In the heavens, God has set a tent for the sun, which comes out like a bridegroom from his wedding canopy, and like a strong man runs its course with joy. Its rising is from the end of the heavens, and its circuit to the end of them, and nothing is hid from its heat. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Once upon a time, a little girl asked her mother, "Where do we come from?" Her mother answered, "We were created by God." The little girl looked puzzled. So the mother asks her, "What's the matter?" She said, "Well, Daddy said we came from monkeys." And her mom replies, "Oh, I was talking about my side of the family. Your daddy's side came from monkeys." Funny, sure, but even more than 150 years after Darwin published On the Origin of Species, people are still trying to make where we came from a wedge issue in everything from the education of our children to presidential elections. And here's what's scary. The number of Americans who deny evolution is actually growing. More often than not, based on a misguided belief that they have to choose between the Bible and godless science. So we're left with a recent Gallup poll that indicates nearly 50% of Americans believe that God poofed us into existence. They deny the theory of evolution as a deluded plot to seduce people away from a belief in God. After all, God created fossils that only seem to be 150 million years old. They're really only 6,000 years old, and God is testing us to see if we believe God can actually do that kind of parlor trick or not. So that's why we're marking today, along with nearly 500 other faith communities around the globe, as Evolution Sunday, and reminding you that the teaching of evolution is officially endorsed by the United Methodist Church, and United Methodists officially oppose the teaching of creationism in public schools. What? Why? because we've got a problem in this country. We're living in what is more and more being referred to as a post-truth society. Facts don't matter anymore. Scientific evidence is dismissed as just some egghead's opinion. Tell a lie enough times, and people start to believe it's the truth. And religion is being exploited to further a way of thinking that misrepresents reality. Many Christians are raised, along with Alice in Wonderland, evidently, to believe six impossible things before breakfast. People are conditioned to believe that God will love them more somehow if they believe that God created the world in six 24-hour days, or that there was an actual ark, or that Mary was a literal virgin. And now we have the Oklahoma legislature stepping in to back them up with Students' Religious Beliefs Protection Act, SB 1470, which would allow parents to sue teachers for $10,000 and be banned from teaching if they teach anything that upsets their religious students' tender sensibilities. Anything that is perceived to have anti-religious content, especially sciencey stuff like evolution or the Big Bang, are particularly suspect. Let me be clear. Call it what you will, creationism, intelligent design, or young eartherism, they're all cockamamie ideas, furthered by people who have an extremely narrow view of the Bible and are dangerously out of touch with reality. As someone who has devoted their life to studying the Bible, I am embarrassed for these Christians who use the Bible to oppose scientific discovery and progress. On previous Evolution Sundays, we've talked about how we as human beings share 98% of our gene sequence with chimpanzees. We share 50% with bananas. We've learned how both of Genesis's creation stories are great stories, written in very particular times for very particular purposes, neither of which has anything to do with history or science. And we've learned how futile it is to try to make Genesis prove something that it was never meant to prove, an obsession our Christian fundamentalist friends refuse to acknowledge. The one thing I want you to go away with today is a sense of how, when it comes to creation, we need to disengage ourselves from the idea that Genesis is more than a beautiful story, and recalibrate our worldview. What I'm talking about has been called big history, and it helps us place ourselves in the context of reality and shift our awareness away from the self-centered idea that it's all about us, and to see ourselves as a tiny part of a much bigger, grander, and awe-filled story. Now, you might be asking yourself, what crazy idea has Felton come up with this time? First off, I didn't come up with it. And secondly, I'm just continuing what has been happening for thousands of years. Religion has to adjust its worldview to account for reality. Otherwise, it dies. Otherwise, we become totally irrelevant, as we have to most of your children and grandchildren. Let me give you an example. Back in the 17th century, about 400 years ago, a man named Galileo got in a lot of trouble for bringing up the findings of this guy named Copernicus, who suggested, what? That the Earth revolves around the sun? No way! Everybody knows that the sun revolves around the Earth. Well, guess what? Copernicus was right, and the Bible was, well, wrong. So it's time for Christians to stop trying to make the evidence revolve around Genesis and put scientific evidence in the middle so that Genesis can be embraced for what it is, a beautiful story, a metaphor that has served its purpose for a time, but now needs to be seen in a different context. When thinking about the importance of this big history, I'm reminded of the teachings of Jesuit paleontologist Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who said, "The movement into time is the most significant event in 2 million years of hominid intelligence." The movement into time. You know, we've taken time for granted. We essentially have been functioning with a 6,000-year timeline of human history in our minds and thinking, ooh, baby, that's a long time. When what we need to do is adjust our concept of our place in a cosmic sense. To help make it easier to get our heads and our hearts around this idea of big history, the Reverend Michael Dowd has conveniently compressed the 13.8 billion year history of the universe, rounded off to 14 billion years, into 100 years. At this time scale, every decade is 1.4 billion years. Each year is 140 million years. Each week, 2.8 million years. Each day, 400,000 years. Each hour is roughly 17,000 years. Each minute, 250 years. And every second on the cosmic century timeline is just under 5 years. So at that time scale, all the hydrogen was formed on day two. Early galaxies arose in the first 20 or 30 years. Bigger galaxies like ours, the Milky Way, have been gobbling up other galaxies over time. Supernovas and red giants created the periodic table of elements, all the atoms that we're made up of, and everything else is made up of. And this, of course, is an ongoing process. Our solar system forms at year 67. Earth cools below the boiling point of water at 69. And then it rains for eons and the oceans were formed. Earth comes alive with bacteria at year 71. At 72, some of these bacteria learn to feed on the photons of the sun. They learn to eat sunlight. That's called photosynthesis. And then begins this incredibly long process of biological evolution. Where is human history? On a 100-year timeline, the entirety of human history is the last week, just the last 7 days. More humbling is that humans didn't domesticate fire until December 29th of the 99th year. We've only been speaking in words since December 31st of the 99th year. Homo sapiens, wise humans, have been here for just the last day of a 100-year process. At 11:20 p.m. on December 31st of the 99th year, that was 10,000 years ago, is when we start seeing human-centered agriculture. At 11:30 p.m., 7,500 years ago, we start seeing chiefdoms and kingdoms. 11:40 p.m., that's 5,000 years ago, we start seeing city-states and writing. 240 years ago, when the United States was created, is 11:59 p.m. on the cosmic timeline, 1 minute before midnight. As Michael Dowd says, "Now, I don't know about you, but if the entire history of the universe is scaled to 100 years, and we show up in the last week, the last 7 days on a cosmic century timeline, and the United States only showed up in the last minute, to my mind, it indicates at least the possibility that the whole thing wasn't meant for us. You've got to grant that as a possibility." And if you do need to continue to embrace the idea that it's all been about us and we're the pinnacle of all of creation, then I have a name for you. Idolater. And God doesn't like idolaters. On the other hand, if we can shift our perspective, like the church had to do after Copernicus and Galileo, we can begin to see ourselves in a new way, as having emerged out of the body of life. We can see ourselves as just a small part of something much bigger, and start to readjust our relationship with creation from being something to be used up for our benefit into being something that we are an integral part of. What we know today could not have been fully known by any religious prophet or sage of a bygone era. Not Moses, not Jesus, not Muhammad, not the Buddha, not Lao Tzu. 20 years ago, Carl Sagan both chided and encouraged us in this way. How is it that hardly any major religion has looked at science and concluded, this is better than we thought? The universe is much bigger than our prophets said, grander, more subtle, more elegant. God must be even greater than we dreamed. A religion, old or new, that stressed the magnificence of the universe as revealed by modern science might be able to draw forth reserves of reverence and awe hardly tapped by the conventional faiths. Sooner or later, such a religion will emerge. That's why we need to embrace evolution and big history, the 13.8 billion year science-based tale of cosmic genesis. From the formation of galaxies and the origin of life to the development of consciousness and culture, and onward to the emergence of ever-widening circles of care and concern. Through big history, we learn that we are made of stardust and that we're related to everything. If you think about it, you can imagine that our species is just the way that the universe is awakening itself. In the 4th century, Augustine reinterpreted Christianity in light of Plato. In the 13th century, Aquinas integrated Aristotle. Today, there are countless theologians re-envisioning what being a person of faith means by integrating Darwin, Einstein, Hubble, Alvarez, Chardin, and so many more. And the only possible response is, move over, Genesis. You've been a fine story while it lasted, but there's a new creation myth in town. It's 14 billion years old, and it's full of drama and wonders that are hard to take in. Science is handing us an origin story, and we've barely begun to understand its mythic dimensions. Once upon a time, a little girl asked her pastor, "Where do we come from?" And her pastor answered, "We come from the stars, and the stuff you're made up of is nearly 14 billion years old, forged over time into a unique, never-to-be-repeated expression of a universe that is now conscious of itself." Isn't that a good story? As Brian Schwimm has said, the earth was once molten rock, and now it sings opera. Let me close with a warning. It's not just the Oklahoma legislature that is a threat to civilization. Give the Arizona legislature a few weeks, and I'm sure they'll introduce similar legislation. But this slide into post-truthism is loosening people's grip on reality, along with the QAnon conspiracy and belief that the moon landing was faked, the belief that the earth is flat is enjoying a huge resurgence, a 2018 poll of millennials, that's people who are currently 26 to 41 years old, revealed that only 66% of them believe that the Earth is a globe spinning in space. That means fully one-third are not sure. They're skeptical, or they lean flat Earth. One-third! And why do I care? Because if we can't agree on reality, what can we agree on? Plus, I feel some guilt by association because the cosmology of the Bible is that of a flat earth. So, as people of faith who take the Bible seriously but not literally, we need to have the confidence to say that the Bible is wrong on this one. Don't let people use the Bible to further wacky ideas like a flat earth or a six-day creation or a literal flood. Jesus taught his followers to love God with all their heart, soul, strength, and mind, even when using our minds means having to change our worldview to keep up with reality. Let me leave you with a spiritual practice that embraces reality and, at the same time, produces a sense of awe that, for me, is akin to a religious experience. Find some place where you can literally watch the sun rise. And as we know, the sun rising is actually an optical illusion. The sun isn't moving at all, even though our psalmist wrote that the sun, like a strong man, runs its course with joy. As the sun rises, try to adjust your perception of the phenomena to where the sun is stationary and you are hurtling toward it at 1,040 miles per hour. Lean into it. Can you feel yourself moving? May we go from this time together, filled with awe over the incredible gift of our humble place in an amazing, wondrous, evolving cosmos. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.